Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hi, I'm Bill Overton. As our series has shown, there were many great players from the Negro Leagues. Some that we all know, like Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron, Satchel Paige, and some, unfortunately, that only the players from that time remember. Our episode today focuses on the players' memories of the greats from the Negro League era. Hall of Famer Hank Aaron remembers that the level of play in the Negro Leagues offered players a chance to play in Major League Baseball.
When I think back, and I've talked with Willie Mays about the Negro Leagues and how special that time was, what was the cohesiveness, what was the general philosophy of the players that played in the Negro Leagues?
I think that we all felt like if we could be successful playing in the Negro League, that we could probably play in the major leagues. I think all of us basically felt that way because usually the players that, especially if you're a young player and you were playing against players who had played a little bit longer than you had, they had been some of them had been in the minor leagues, some of them had the experience of playing against great Negro League players. So we all felt like if we could have a good year, a good season, that you had a chance to play in the major leagues.
Outfielder Gerald Kasten, he recalls growing up watching the great talent and then being able to play in the league himself.
They had so many stars in that league who had so much talent. You had an opportunity to see them growing up as well as when you played in the league itself. How would you describe them?
I was bad and hard, dedicated ball player. They were good ball players, just that at the time that, they come along, that it wasn't the right time. My mother used to take us to see the Negro League All-Star back in 54, 55. She'd pack a lunch on Sunday. They played double hitters there. We went to see them. I mean, it'd be packed. And those guys was really good. But I had no idea one day I'd be playing in there, you know. I always loved to play ball. I was pretty good in basketball. Mediocre football. I know my baseball coach, if I may say, in high school, his name was George Corman. He told me, he said, "Kasten, you're a good ball player. You got a future in baseball." He said, "Let that football coach, let them other idiots knock out their brains." So I quit. I had made the football team. So I told Coach Tobin, I said, "Mr. Corman wanted me to quit playing because he wanted me to, you know, for the baseball team. So I got a future that he said, you wait till I see you, old George."
Here's pitcher Hank Mason remembering the great players that came out of the Negro Leagues.
Let me tell you this. Some of the best baseball players in the world come out of the Negro League. And Kansas City Monarchs sent more black baseball, well, they had to be black, sent more baseball players to the major league than any other team in the Negro League, or maybe all of them combined. There was Jackie Robinson, Henry Mason, Pancho Herrera, Ernie Banks. All of those guys came out of the Negro League. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, all of those guys came out of the Negro League, and they were great baseball players. Now, I wasn't great, but I did make it.
Pitcher Eugene Scruggs recalls the style of play in the Negro Leagues and how it created stars like Willie Mays.
All of them are very special baseball players. What was it that they all did that made them so special, Eugene?
Well, you know, Willie Mays, you know, he made some outstanding catches, you know, over his head catches that you never seen that around here. He could run, he could throw, and he was a, you know, all-around ball player.
Gerald Kasten recalls the best pitcher that he ever caught for during his time in the Negro Leagues.
You were a catcher. Who was the best pitcher that you ever caught?
Oh, I would say old Bulldog, George Thomas. He was my roommate in college, too, and we played sandlot ball in Chicago before we went to play for the Philadelphia Stars. Those guys, they're good fastballs. I don't know how they time them then, but now they time them in the 90, 92, 93. But Bulldog, man, he had to have 105. I had to have a sponge in my hand. Man, that catcher meant to catch that guy.
Pitcher Eugene Scruggs remembers striking out Negro League star Bob Wilson 3 times in front of MLB scouts.
You played against the Kansas City Monarchs, and one of the Monarchs players was Bob Wilson, and he was really looking forward to playing this particular game. Yeah, tell me that about that game.
Yeah, Bob Wilson, he was he lives in California now, so I was told, because I haven't seen him since the days in baseball. But this particular game that we were playing in Grand Rapids, Bob, he come up to the bat 3 times, and so each time I struck Bob out, and he come back and told me, he said, "You know what I'm saying?" He said, I tried all I could to hit that ball, okay, but that punk-ass curveball, I couldn't handle it.
And, of course, he was being scouted that day for the major leagues, was he not? And he went 0-3. You struck him out 3 times.
Yeah, he was. His guy was all in the stand. He was. Maybe that's why that I struck him out. You know, kind of that. You know, somebody was there watching him.
Catcher Ernest Fan remembers being amazed at the level of talent in the Negro Leagues.
Well, I tell you what, I was a young kid, 14, 15 years old, 15 when I went in the Negro League, and some of those guys, like Dreeson, and the name was Dreeson, he went on to the majors. I got a chance to see Satchel pitch. And I didn't see Josh Gibson. I read a book on that where he was talking about pointers about hitting. But a lot of those guys, you know, as a kid, you don't remember. But the talent level, oh, my goodness. Those guys could hit and run. I mean, they could run. I've seen guys, we playing team like Birmingham Black Barons. Last game we played, they have 2 leadoff men. And during that time, we were young. We didn't know anything about fundamentals. Those guys laid the ball down first base. Next thing you know, they're standing up on third because nobody covers third. And the talent level, I mean, this is something we figured out being kids. We'll sit there and watch the team. If you don't cover that base, we're going to steal it. And all the things that we learned in baseball, we didn't have coaches. We just got out there and played and figured it out ourselves. But as far as the guys that I've seen the greatest first baseman we ever wanted to see. His name was James Ivory, played with the Birmingham Black Barons. Great center fielder, Jesse Mitchell. And my manager played professional baseball. He was a .344 hitter in AAA in professional baseball, and he fell under the same category I did. They had enough black players on the team. Now, let me remind you, this was not a baseball rule. This was a rule that the owners and the executives sit down and made up. The only 2 black players to a team.
Pitcher J.C. Castleberry recalls his teammates being the best players he had seen, including a player who was valued higher than Hank Aaron.
J.C., let me ask you a little bit about the players that you played against or you witnessed and watched, because the Negro League certainly had so many great. You already mentioned about Willie Mays and others like that, Hank Aaron. But tell me some of the other players that stood out to you while you were playing, either playing against or playing with.
The guy that stood out with me was most of the guys on my team. Joe Cherry. We picked him up in Virginia Beach one Sunday. He was like me. He could pitch. He could catch. He could play first base, second base. As a matter of fact, when we played in Yankee Stadium, I caught him. Another guy was Van Rushen out of Arizona. Van Rushen, I think they sold Hank Aaron for $25,000, and they sold Van Rushen for like $50,000. Van Rushen was the only guy that they sold for more money than Hank Aaron. And then we had another guy named Canigetti, shortstop. Heck of a shortstop from New York City. And then we had a guy by the name of Green, shortstop. And then we had Double Duty, who was a left and right-handed pitcher. And Carl Phoney, I can't understand today why he didn't make it to the major leagues, because he was a pitcher, but he had everything. He was throwing sliders before sliders were fashionable. And he had every pitch he threw moved. His fastball moved. It jumped. Everything he threw. Then there was Bobby Veal. Bobby Veal and I played together in Birmingham in the Industrial League. Bobby Veal threw so hard, the catcher we had called Big Man, Bobby Veal split his hand through the net.
Infielder Reginald Howard recalls his memory of Uncle Jim Taylor as his manager.
But your close friend, Candy Jim Taylor, you alluded to him a little bit earlier, legendary Negro League manager. Tell me a little bit about his history.
I loved Uncle Jim. Everybody called him Uncle Jim, Oscar Charleston, and Buck O'Neill, all the other managers, everybody called him Uncle Jim. I don't know. I was as close to Uncle Jim as a kid can be, you know, a child can be to an adult man. And for some reason, we hit it off. He come through. I was like the visiting team bad boy for all the black teams that came in here in the South Bend to play the Studebaker team. And again, I met Uncle Jim when they came in, and we hit it off. And so I go to Chicago periodically to see him. And in fact, I worked the East-West game in 1946 and 47, which was the All-Star game. But he was just somebody I love. I used to love to hear him talk to umpires. Ooh, he could talk so bad.
The most brought up name when asking about legends in the Negro League was Satchel Paige. E. Lloyd Robinson remembers Satchel's ability to make his pitches move.
You mentioned about Satchel Paige. That is the name probably, along with Buck O'Neill and maybe a handful of others, that people remember most about the Negro League. Tell me a little bit about him, because aside from being nice, tell me about his baseball skills.
Oh, he could throw that ball like lightning. He didn't throw nothing that went straight. Everything he threw, it went up, down, crossways, sideways, or some kind of way. He never threw a straight pitch. Yeah, sir. And Buck Leonard hit that ball so hard, it looked like he was just throwing them up, hitting them.
Reginald Howard also remembers the influence of cool Papa Bell and the work ethic of Satchel Paige that made him a highly paid player.
Most people, if they know anything about the Negro Leagues, know those last three names about, Cool Papa Bell and the others. Tell me about them. What was fact and what was fiction about them?
I don't know. I try to stay with them all that fiction stuff. I can stay with it. I don't even like to even discuss it. But a lot I got from Jimmy Crutchfield. I don't know if you know. Jimmy was on that same team. He lived in the same building my brother lived in Chicago. And every time I go to Chicago, I would just... I'd get with him and spend as much time as I possibly could. Jimmy, and the one thing that was so outstanding about Bell, and I really admire him for this, I've never heard anybody echo a disparaging word about him. A first-class gentleman all the way around. And I really admire that so much.
When it came to Satchel Paige, the great line is that he was so fast that he could turn out the light and he could get in bed.
That's foolishness. I don't even like to discuss that kind of stuff. No, I'm serious. That's a waste of time when we could do something meaningful that the other people can. We can give out meaningful information and not throw out that kind of garbage.
Well, when you say meaningful, tell me a little bit what's meaningful to you as somebody that played in the Negro Leagues.
Well, let's take it from a social standpoint of view. Let's take Satchel Paige.
And this thing I loved about Satcher, a lot of people don't know this. I explained to you about Negro League games being played 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, okay? Let's say Satchel pitches Saturday at Moomark Park in Kansas City against the Memphis Red Sox. And he pitches a good game. All right, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the fourth day, it's his turn again. But they're playing somebody in Beloit, Wisconsin. You know, a little bit of, they're barnstorming now, just a little bit ahead of a high school team. So why would they use it? They wouldn't use a good pitcher on that day. However, 3 weeks ahead of time, a team in Minot, North Dakota, or in Rochester, Minnesota, said, hey, we want to hire Satcher for that day. I call him a hired gun. And Satcher would go there and pitch for that team on that Wednesday. But now he would pitch there, but then he'd come back Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're playing in Memphis, ballpark full, and Satcher Page's pitching. He did a lot of that. He did a lot of leaving the club that he was with and go and pitch outside of the Negro League. And that's why he was one of the highest paid players in baseball.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Pitcher Hank Mason recalls his time playing with Satchel Paige and his ability to control his pitches, along with his humor and kindness.
Let me tell you, I never played with Satchel in the Negro League. But after I advanced to AAA baseball with the Miami Marlins, that's where I played with Satchel. Satchel, his strength was control. He could throw the ball any place that he wanted to throw it and as hard as he wanted to throw it. If he wanted to throw it on the outside corner, he could do it. I tell you what. When we would go to the bullpen, Satchel and I were relief pitchers. I was the long man, and he was the short man. And Satchel could take a chewing gum wrapper and throw it just right on the corners, down the middle, any place that he wanted to throw it. And I think that was Satchel's success.
He also had a great personality, did he not? I've heard that he was very funny.
Very, very funny. Yeah, he was. You know, I don't know how much money Satchel was making, but some mornings, like we were in Toronto or Montreal or someplace like that, he always called me country boy. I came from Marshall, Missouri, and he was from Kansas City. And he would call me up and say, hey, country boy, you want something to eat for breakfast? I said, yeah. He said, well, come on over. And I would go over, and he'd have a corned beef hash, poached eggs, and hash browns, toast, and all of that kind of stuff. And I couldn't afford that kind of stuff, not on my salary, but he could do it. And maybe six or seven times while we were on a road trip, that's what he would do. He would invite me over to his room in the morning time to eat breakfast with him.
Pitcher Don Woods remembers the first time he saw Satchel Paige and the advice that Satchel Paige gave him.
Tell me about the first time you ever saw Satchel Paige.
Okay. The first time I met Satch is, which I didn't realize until after we had a conversation about some of the things he has accomplished. And I realized then that I'm in a company of somebody who's really one of a kind. he was a person that was one who knew what he was talking about, especially with baseball. He was very confident, and I was really, really impressed with him. And to me, saying to myself, here I am sitting in the dugout next to this guy called Satchel Paige.
What was the best piece of advice he ever gave you, Don?
He told me one of the things I can recall very well. He says, when you're pitching, never, ever get nervous, because your opponent, your batter, they can tell if you're nervous. Always take control of the game and know what you're doing and become confident when you're out there.
You know, it's always been said about him how fast he was. And, of course, the great line is, I think this came from his roommate, said he was so fast that when he turned off the light, he got in bed before it got dark. But tell me, what were the little things about him that made him special?
Okay, I think that some of the things that he did, especially, and I asked him, you know, I said, you know, Satch, I've read a lot of things about you and statements they say that you've done over a period of over 5 decades that you've been playing baseball. And I said, how much of that is true? He said, let me tell you one thing. He says, any statement I made, I had to proof those statements to make sure it was correct. So he said, anything you read about me is true.
Everything I'm hearing, everything I'm hearing about him is that he had a sense of humor as well.
Oh, he was, and I think that probably made him such a great ball player. He never, to me, seemed to be tight, and he enjoyed the game.
Do you remember any of the stories that he shared with you that made you laugh?
Oh yeah, he one of the stories he told me was that when he went to I forget exactly the location, but he would always guarantee wherever he played, he would guarantee that the first 6 outs would be strikeouts. In addition to that, during for instance, the third inning, one out, he would bring his outfielders into the dugout and have them sit down, and he would pitch. And they could never get the ball out in the outfield.
Why was that? I mean, what was his pitches? What did he do with his throws?
You know what? I think what made him so great, he had pinpoint control. All of his pitches were knee-high. He could throw a ball over a matchbook with no problem every time.
By doing that, did the opposition, the other players, get upset that maybe he was showing them up, or was that not a part of the baseball lore at that time?
No, I think that they considered him as being someone above level of everybody else. And they didn't make him mad. They were not mad, but in fact, they were praising him on the talent he had. In a lot of cases, as old as he was, playing against those younger guys.
Was there a game that you happened to witness personally that you'll never forget that he pitched?
Well, when he played with us, which was 63, he was there as a show card.
Mm-hmm.
He played a couple of innings. And I know at that time he was like 50-some years old. And the few batters that he faced, out of maybe 6 batters, he struck out 3 of them. So he still had his speed. He had still had his control, and he was just something to see.
Yeah. How old was he? Because there was always some question about his age when he was playing, particularly later in his career like you just talked about.
Yeah. Well, there's always been a saying that nobody knew exactly how old he was. So it said that he was like, I guess when he finished playing, he was like at the age of 55, it says something about he's too harder than anyone in his generation. But the record says that really, who knows how old he was.
Infielder Dennis Biddle closes out our episode by remembering some of his heroes and his memory of meeting Jackie Robinson.
Players like Ted Double Duty Radcliffe, he should have been in the Hall of Fame. He didn't play in the major league because he missed his college. Josh Johnson. He was a catcher for the Homestead Grays when Josh Gibson came in as a youngster that took his place because he went to the military. Bobby Robinson. who was a human vacuum cleaner around third base, traveled with me many years, told me about Ty Cobb and how him and Ty Cobb were good friends, and nobody liked Ty Cobb. There was other players too. I met Jackie in 1955. The Dodgers came in, and I was with the Cubs. I was with the Cubs as a free agent. Jackie and I had a dinner downtown Chicago. Not Jackie, just me. It was five of us. Ernie Banks, Gene Baker, Rock Campanella. Newcomb didn't show up. But you know, and I often talk about this because this is the highlight, one of the highlights of my life, meeting Jackie. I had heard about him, I read about him and things that he went through. And here I am sitting across the table from him. And he didn't look real to me. His hair was white. And I looked at him and he said, "You know, kid," he called me kid. He said, "they cannot write in a book or show in a movie what I went through." But you see, I knew what Jack had gone through in the Negro League and Major League too, because, hey, I'd gone through it myself in the Negro League. Many times I wanted to go home to mama. So I asked Mr. Robinson, "Did you ever think about quitting?" I did. He looked at me and said, "Every day." He said, "I thought about it every day, but I had made a promise that I would open the door so other blacks would be able to play in the major league." That's something Mr. Robinson told me that I'll always be here. His wife was 100 years old now. She's a friend of mine. I have pictures of me and her. And that woman had some courage that no other woman I think had. She did some things that I don't understand how she made it through. But she did. So that's one of the highlights of my life, meeting Jackie Robinson. Of course, I met a lot of other players. I met Frank Robinson. I met, of course, Willie Mays was one of us. Hank Aaron and I was good friends. But there was a lot of other players. Buck Leonard should have been in the Hall of Fame. He should be in the Hall of Fame. There are a lot of other players, too. There was a lot of players that I saw play, sir. I saw them play. Unbelievable players. It was in their 30s that would have been Hall of Famers in the Major League. But they never had a chance.
Behind the Barrier, Voices from the Negro Leagues, is narrated by Bill Overton, produced by Taylor Haber. Executive producers are Jason Weichelt, Darren Peck, and Ron Barr. Please check out our next episode, as well as the episodes in this series. This series is distributed by Sports Byline USA and the 8 Side Network.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah!
and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tanner girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.